You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out the door.
Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How you doing today? Another gorgeous day in the wine country. What can I say? This is really a pretty spring. It's only been too hot a couple of times, and today I thought was absolutely perfect. And for those of you listening in real time, I do have to tell you that last night I went to the new restaurant, St. Rose, the latest incarnation. Cafe St. Rose, of course, closed a month ago, and Two Crows Roadhouse closed about, I guess, about a week after that, and Mark Maliki and his crew had something like 17 days in which to take over and revamp St. Rose. And I went last night, and it is the most delicious space. Before you even look at the menu, you just want to gobble it all up. The colors, and of course you don't know this by looking at it, but the colors Mark chose for the outside are called bittersweet chocolate and defiant red. And that whole theme just carries through. And there's two inside dining rooms, and right now one wonderful patio that has sort of a cantina feel. It's really sweet. And I think by next weekend, the second patio is going to open up, and it's going to have, God, it practically looks like a tiki bar and couches and music. And I think on Mother's Day, he's going to be doing something along the lines of Samba Your Mama, Brazilian food and dancing. So congratulations to Mark Maliki. He's wanted that space there. It's on Highway 12 between Sebastopol and Freestone. He's wanted that space for a really long time. He and his wife, Jenny, who does the desserts and makes those incredible caramels, and his daughter, Ruby, who is doing a lot of work in the front of the house. She is doing great. They live like within 2 minutes. So congratulations to all of them for getting it. And check it out. I think it's going to be a really big hit in just a great place in West County. So we're not talking about West County tonight, though. I've had somebody I've wanted to talk to for a really long time, ever since I heard about this wonderful place over in Rutherford, Round Pond. So Ryan McDonald, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And also we have Carrie Gott of Gott Group, and you are the consulting winemaker for Round Pond.
Yes, I am, and it's nice to be here.
Well, thank you very much for coming over from the other valley, and you all the way from the Delta. On your boat, or from your boat, I should say. So, first of all, let's talk about Rutherford and where you are geographically. Can you just sort of position us?
Sure. We're right on Rutherford Crossroad, just right on the main road between 29 and Silverado Trail. Literally, 2 minutes from Beaulieu Vineyards, just east on the road. And if we're if you know the other wineries locally, we're right across from Honig, Frog's Leap, and Camus Vineyards. We're just situated right there in the middle.
Nice little area there.
Yeah, it's great.
And tell me about the name.
Round Pond, actually, people think it's because there's a round pond on the property, but in fact, Round Pond is named for a place my dad used to go back east outside of West Point, New York, where he was, where his dad actually was stationed, and he lived there as a kid, and they would go to this pond with his family, and it was just a wonderful retreat for them. So when we first purchased our property up in Rutherford, and I guess that was in the early 80s, he named it Round Pond, hoping that it would become the same thing for us.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Now, you do more than make wine. You have a really interesting convergence of little artisan industries there.
Thank you. We do lots of different things. We are both very focused on the wines that we do, but we also do olive oils, red wine vinegars, and citrus syrups. And always looking for new and interesting sort of artisan little food products to do, things that we can make, things that we grow on the estate and things that we can make right there.
Mm-hmm. And you do your oils or estate oils, and you have a processing facility there, right?
We do. We all of our olive trees are grown on the estate. We've got 12 acres. It's small. Right on the property, it's all organically grown, and then as we were getting into making olive oil, we realized for quality purposes, we really needed to have a mill there to be able to do it ourselves. Freshness is key with olive oil. So mm-hmm. we built a mill, and we, you know, pick the olives every November, and it takes about, you know, 20 seconds to drive them over to the mill and press them into fresh oil and make the product that we do.
What style of mill did you put in?
We are unusual in that we have two different pressing methods. We actually have a hammer mill, which is the modern way to do it, and then we've got a 2-ton stone frontoio, the typical stones that you
see
in Italy.
Yeah, and that you see down, I guess you see them down at Frontoio, the
exactly,
restaurant.
Exactly.
And there's now one up in Cloverdale.
Oh, fantastic.
Well.
I had heard that.
Yeah. Terra Savia.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it's nice to see that traditional method being used. What determines which method you're going to use?
You know, they really produce very different style olive oils. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've got 8 different varietal olive trees on the property, and one of the things about having your own mill is that you can then pick each of those varietals individually and then press them as works best for that particular varietal. So it's very similar to wine in that way. But for the stone, for instance, it creates a very gentle, soft, buttery, rich type of olive oil, so it's perfect for our Spanish varietals. And then the hammer mill tends to bring out the peppery, spicy, more typical Italian Tuscan flavors, so we tend to press, or rather crush, our Italian varietals in,
oh.
in the hammer mill.
So do you bottle 2 types?
We do. So
exactly. You don't do single varietal?
No, we don't, but we do have fresh olive oil days, the third Saturday of every month, where people can come and taste single varietal olive oils, and that was something was actually kind of goes back to why we got into the olive oil business. Dad and mom would come up from the city, and they would go to this place in St. Helena and pick up fresh pressed oil. And so we wanted to be able to recreate that. So you can mm-hmm. come and have some fresh oils.
And how long does that go on?
We do
season?
It throughout the year.
Oh, you do? Throughout
we do.
The year?
Yeah, one of the things, again, with having our own mill, we're able to maintain our oil in stainless steel tanks with nitrogen and keep it cold, and that really mm-hmm. maintains the freshness. So, you know, people can come up year-round and have a little fresh oil out of the tank and see what it's like to have fresh oil.
Oh, that's really great. I was thinking for some reason that it was that you did that before you bottled and only did it seasonally.
No, we like to save a little bit, you know, not too much, but uh-huh. we save a little bit in tank. And sort of the final piece of what we do is we bottle in very small lots throughout the year. So we mm-hmm. actually keep most of our oil in tank throughout the year so that when we do bottle, it's the freshest oil possible. Because once oil goes into the bottle, it starts to deteriorate. Mm-hmm. So we want to have it sit in the bottle as little as possible mm-hmm. before people, you know, eat it.
That's really great. And I've had your oils, and they're really quite luscious.
Oh, thank you.
The citrus oils are, the Meyer lemon oil is so, it's really bright.
Thank you.
And very, very engaging. And I'm not a big fan of some of the oils that have garlic or basil mm-hmm. or herbs. I think it tastes a little artificial. But the Meyer lemon oils, the citrus oils, are lovely when they're done well.
Thank you.
So, and you grow your citrus, right?
Well, we do, and we've actually outgrown the amount of citrus we have. So we uh-huh. now pull from, you know, local organic farmers uh-huh. for our Meyer lemons and for our blood oranges. But one of the things that we do, I think, that is a little bit unique is that we take the peel from the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't use the juice, we don't infuse it, and we actually crush in the stone an old stone mill, the peel along with the olives in whatever blend we're looking to do in particular. And that's how we create a sort of very subtle citrus olive oil.
You're just getting those oils. From the skin, that outer skin where the volatile oils are.
Exactly. So it's still very much an olive oil, but you get that nice essence of, you know, Meyer lemon or blood orange. And the Meyer lemon in this year's case is very, it has a little nice pepperiness to it. And then the blood orange is more smooth and kind of soft, but both nice and pretty different.
You are listening to Mouthful. We're talking about Round Pond in Rutherford. We'll be right back.
Well, when I was a young man and never been kissed, I got to thinking it over how much I had missed. So I got me a girl and I kissed her and then, oh Lordy, well, I kissed her again because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, I asked her to marry and be my sweet wife. I told her we'd be so happy for the rest of her life. I begged her and I pleaded like a natural man. And then, whoops, oh Lordy, well, she gave me her hand because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, we worked very hard, both for me and my wife, for working hand in hand.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB. Thanks for joining us. We are talking with Ryan O'Donnell and Carrie Gott of the Gott Group. You're a vineyard and winery estates management consultant.
Yeah, I help people get into the wine business. I'm fourth generation of the California wine business. Have a son who's in the wine business and have grew up on large wineries, ran large wineries in Napa Valley around the state. So I've been all over the grape and wine business, from vineyards to winemaking. And Brian's father and family members came to me in 2001 and asked me to start to put together their wine operation. And I've made their wine since 2002 and have been watching Round Pond go from nothing, basically a lot of vineyards, to creating the wines. And we opened the new winery this last year and put the whole operation together. And I work with Ryan and her brother, Miles.
Now, do you do something similar for other wineries, or has this been kind of a full-time project?
No, I do this for a relatively large collection of people in Napa Valley. Most of it's focused in Napa Valley. I'll have a few clients that I've done special projects for, whether it was Texas or down near Santa Barbara or sort of a couple here in Sonoma County. So it's, but Round Pond is actually one of my largest clients, and it's fun to watch something from 2001, no wine, no brand name, no label, no nothing except a lot of vineyards, to start to creating wine and then finally get the winery open this last August. And you know, it's a fun project, and the McDonald family is a great family to work with.
Sort of like, you know, thinking you're going to have a baby and having the baby and watch it grow up and start school.
Yes, except they're stainless steel tanks and grapevines.
Yes. So what are you growing?
On our property, we actually grow primarily Cabernet Sauvignon, and we've been there since the early 80s. So, you know, a large part of what we do is growers. We're grape growers and grow Cabernet and sell to local wineries. And, of course, we've always made wine as well for ourselves. But, you know, the first project that we actually put out for sale to the public was with the 2002 Cabernet Sauvignon. And we do have other varietals. We do in just very small amounts, but a little Petit Verdot, a little Nebbiolo, and then we've got, you know, a little Sangiovese and Syrah that we just have on the property that we sell. We don't actually make that into wine.
How much Nebbiolo? I find Nebbiolo an interesting varietal.
Yeah, you know, the reason we did Nebbiolo is because of my dad, who absolutely loves, you know, Italian Barolos and Nebbiolos. And so we thought, well, let's just try a little on the property and see how it does. And it's an entirely different venture in California and in the Napa Valley than it is in Italy. And the wine itself is very different. And, you know, we didn't know what we would think. But when we opened the winery last July, it actually sold out, I think, in a couple of weeks, all three vintages. So we decided we'd keep doing it. for now, but just very small amounts.
I made Nebbiolo as a kid up in Amador County, where
really?
I had my first winery, and so that would be in the 70s that I made Nebbiolo. Planted the vineyards, made the wine, mm-hmm. and so when Bob, Ryan's dad, took me out in the vineyard early on, very first years that I was involved on the property, and Bob takes me over to a section of vineyard and goes, here's Nebbiolo, and I, oh my God, because I had made Nebbiolo in probably 2 decades. So it was great to go back and start making Nebbiolo again.
Is there anything different about working with it?
Well, it's a very tannic variety, and it's very low color. So those are the two major things about it. So it's a what the clone that they have is called Lampia. It's a big berry clone, big bunch. And it actually, just before we pick, you go out there in the vineyards early in the morning on a, you know, and the sun's coming up over the hills, light goes directly through the bunches, or
really?
Directly through the berries, and they shine in a very soft pink color. There's not a lot of color. So when you make the wine, you usually end up with something that's a little bit darker than rosé, so we add a little bit of Petit Verdot to the blend, 1%, something uh-huh. like that, and it adds just a little bit of color, but so it ends up being looking somewhat like dark rosé, very tannic, which makes the wine age very long, uh-huh. and by the time we bottle, the typical 18 to 20 months after picking the grapes, most of the tannins have changed, and they're relatively soft, and the wine has a very lifted fruity aroma. So it's completely different. It ferments different. It has a lot of pulp in the berries. So you have a completely different whole winemaking venture. But still, it's basically crush the grapes, ferment on the skins. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really need extended maceration because of the tannins that are mm-hmm. that are there.
Yeah,
automatically.
We think extended maceration would
and bottle the wine
like,
and
make it harsher.
And so it's pretty wine. And I think anybody who comes into the wine and really enjoys tasting the Nebbiolo, it's different. It's not a Cabernet. It's lighter in color. They're fascinated by the name because the name is related to the word fog, mm-hmm. Nebbiolo, because it's a very late ripening variety. It always is the last grape that we pick. And somebody can say the name Nebbiolo, and so you tell them the little story about it, and they taste this wine that they really like. It's been really popular, and we're thinking about grafting over some more vines to more Nebbiolo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I look forward to coming by the winery sometime and tasting it. Tell me about the Cab.
Well, the Cabernet really, as I said earlier, is our focus, you know, being in mm-hmm. Rutherford.
Rutherford,
history.
I mean, it's that whole area. I mean, Napa Valley to me seems, I always think of Cabernet.
Absolutely. And, you know, we thought we should really focus on what we can do best, and we think we can really excel in the Cabernet area. So when we set out to do this, my brother and Carrie got worked together very closely together, trying to define the style and what did we want it to be, and very purposefully chose a particular style, which is, you know, elegant, a big bold California cab, but something that's very elegant and great with food. And so that was what we were going for as far as style and technique.
Mm-hmm. The vineyards around the winery, all of the Round Pond vineyards are adjacent to the winery, and it's on level land there. Goes from the river to about a half a mile away from the river and then stretches along. And it's an area of Napa Valley that there's been a lot of different courses of the Napa River and then another river running through the area. So the soil is very diverse on their property. And so we have places where the soil is a little heavy and places where it's very gravelly, places where it's very sandy. And so it allows us, when we pick the grapes, we can get a lot of diversity in the style of Cabernet that we get. Mm-hmm. But generally, if we stand back and look at all of the Cabernet that we pick, it makes a elegant but not fat, dark, black wine that is extremely high in alcohol. No, it's a wine that has this built-in elegance to it. And one of the things that's great about the vineyards there and that soil is that we're typically picking about 2 weeks later than a lot of other vineyards uh-huh. in Napa Valley. So we get towards the end of the ripening season in October, when we're usually picking most of our fruit, there's less chance of heat waves and less chance of having grapes that get too sweet. So,
now, is that because of the proximity to the river?
It's just the deep soil that's there. So it's just, and the rootstock and the clone and the trellis. There's a lot of things that just delay our ripening. Not a problem with the ripening, but it just makes us run a little bit later, which just shoves our harvest back a little bit. And it actually means that we get more maturity, more flavor in the grapes without having runaway alcohols.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you are to be commended for that.
Yeah.
I don't like the trend towards runaway alcohols. I think I'm probably in the minority when it comes to voices, public voices, but there are some others that are applauding anyone who's keeping the alcohol a little lower.
Round Pond Cabernet usually ends up being between 14.1 and maybe 14.5percent alcohol. And that's enough.
That's enough.
It doesn't need
more.
To be more. Yeah.
You know, when you keep it lower, you can drink more, and that's a good thing.
So it's the wine is it's normal fermentations. I mean, we don't try to do anything trick with fermentations. We do a little bit of bleeding the tanks.
No, explain what bleeding the tanks means.
Well, saignée is actually the French term.
Saignée,
but
yes.
So what we're involved with is we'll bring in fruit, and if we'll just take a look at where the sugar is, and sometimes we need to add a little bit of water so that we don't end up with 15.2. So we'll bleed out more juice out of the tank. Just as soon as we crush into the tank, we may take out 2%, 3% liquid out of the tank.
What happens to that?
We dispose of it.
Okay.
If the winery was huge, we would start making a rosé. And right now, Cabernet of Rosé is something that nobody wants to.
Nobody's done that yet, have they?
Oh, no. There's been a lot of, you know, in the early days of white Zinfandel, and then there was white Merlot, and then there was white Cabernet Sauvignon. Okay, so that's, it's been done. But Cabernet is a variety that doesn't make...
Doesn't really want to go there.
Well, it doesn't make good rosé. Uh-huh. So enough of that. But so we bleed the tanks a little bit when necessary. We don't do it to every tank and all the wines. And add then, if necessary, maybe a little bit of water back. And it somewhat concentrates the wine. Mm-hmm. But remember, we're only talking just a couple percentage. Mm-hmm. But it tends to give us just a little bit more depth in the wine. So then a few-day cold soak, 2 or 3 days. We soak the grapes before fermentation starts at about 50 degrees. Then we start a fermentation, and then the rest of the whole fermentation cycle will last 10 to maybe 14 days. So cold soak for a few days, ferment. Once we're close to dryness, we'll press, keep the press wine separate, and the free run in, then basically goes directly to barrels. And that's where all the wine is right now, is in barrels. And we're typically about 85, some vintage has been a little bit higher than that, new French oak barrels. We buy very good French oak barrels. And the wine goes through 18 to 20 months of aging in the barrels, racked a couple times, and then bottled. It sits in the warehouse for a year. Mm-hmm. And then we get to drink some here.
Great. Well, feel free to pour. So you release a wine when it's, 3 years?
About 3 years. Exactly. And one of the things with our Cabernet that we were excited and lucky to be able to do is while we were growers, we actually made a wine on site just for family and friends. And
such a nice sound. And you may pour, too, if you like. I'll even hand you my glass.
Thank you. So we made a wine on site, and you know, we've got about 350 acres, so it took some time for us to really learn where the best grapes came from. And so, you know, for 15, 20 years while we were making this wine for ourselves, we really figured out the best sites. And so we've been lucky to take probably less than 1% of what we grow and put it into this wine, and hopefully it makes the best Cabernet that we can make from the property. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, let's take
So the question is, did I get enough sound?
You got excellent sound, but we're going to get just a little tiny bit more sound. So let's pass this glass over. This is a very, you know, I need to expand my on-air vocabulary, because whenever I like a wine, I tend to fall back on the word pretty, because that's something I really enjoy in a wine, is a prettiness, which to me means it's silky or satiny on the palate, and this definitely is. The tannins are not fuzzy.
One of the challenges of making Cabernet in Napa Valley is to put together a wine that has the maturity of flavors, mm-hmm. and that the wine, that the grapes have been on the vine long enough that the tannins start to mature, but that we don't get the fruit sunburned, mm-hmm. and that we don't change the texture and quality of the skins, because that's where all the flavor and that's where all the color is. Mm-hmm. And that's why this extra couple weeks that we get in the vineyard before the fruit is totally ripe really helps make a style of, and the deep soil, make a style that we have very sound berries coming into the winery. And that's part of which gives us this envelope of there's a lot of flavor, a lot of texture, the mm-hmm. color's good, but it's not overdone. And it really makes for a very elegant, drinkable wine.
Yeah, that it's very drinkable.
You know, I mean, we all search for words. Food friendly is mm-hmm. one that we mm-hmm. use. I don't know that a lot of people understand that, but it's a wine that this is the 2004 that we're tasting, has the ability to go to the table, and I mean, we only bottled this just a couple years ago, go to the table and be very elegant, yet at the same time be able to probably age 12 to 15 years and staying the style of young Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. And then obviously it will age longer than that. So I think we're very pleased with the style mm-hmm. that we've been able to get out of the vineyard, mainly because it's consistent from 2002 to 2007, the vintage that we just had. You can really see a consistent style out mm-hmm. of the vineyard, which mm-hmm. is great as a winemaker because we know what we're going into each year.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very elegant. It has, the tannins are nice and silky, and I so appreciate that in a wine. And you would not mistake it for any other varietal. And to me, that's one of the biggest compliments you can give a Cabernet, because if, you know, a Cabernet should taste like a Cabernet, and, you know, some don't. So this does. I think it's a very nice wine.
Thank you. One of the things that I've heard a lot, actually, in taking the wine out is that it's very representative of Rutherford.
Yes.
And people
mm-hmm.
think
yes.
you know, you can really taste the Rutherford in this wine, and sort of that Rutherford dust that you
mm-hmm.
hear about.
Yes.
And so that is part of the consistency and what we're looking for with the wine.
Mm-hmm. What does the wine sell for?
It sells for $60.
And what's your case production? I assume that varies year to year.
It does, but we're at about 1,400 cases for the mm-hmm. 2004. So, again, you know, we're really focused on staying small, staying mm-hmm. true to the quality, and really excited to be into our own winery this year and, you know, harvested our first lot of wine at the winery this past year. So that was exciting.
Well, congratulations. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Today I got a long letter from one who still cares for me. She asked lots of questions, like would I call her sometimes, and was I getting back on my feet. She asked if I had quit drinking, like I promised her long ago.
Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB members and from Ibis Builders, offering mindful living in sustainable residential lofts. With integrated professional first floor office space, Florence Lofts in downtown Sebastopol at florenceLofts.com.
And now it's back to me. It's Michelle. It's a mouthful. It's Round Pond. We have just tried their really very beautiful 2004 Cabernet. And now let's talk about the winery. Are you open by appointment only, or are you open for drop-in?
We are open by appointment only. Mm-hmm. And we're open 5 days a week, Thursday through Monday. And you can come in between 11 and 4, and I'm sure we can make room for you so you can drop on by as well. But we have two different tasting options. We have a full guided, you know, tour and tasting if people are interested in seeing the winery. And then we also have an estate tasting. If you've seen a lot of wineries and you don't want to do the tour, you can just come on upstairs. Our hospitality floor is on the second level, and it's got a terrace that overlooks the valley. And we do a full-fledged food and wine pairing. Since so much of what we do is food, we like to have pairings that we put with each of our three or four wines that we're serving, and we use the foods from the garden on the property along with our olive oils, vinegars, and mm-hmm. syrups in the food, and sort of pull it all together that way for people. And it's meant to be, you know, very loungy, relaxing. You're not rushed. Mm-hmm. People spend an hour, hour and a half, and just take in the view and enjoy the wines. And
and that's available whenever you're open.
It is.
As long as you call in. That's
yep.
great.
And there's a deck outside that you overlook all of Napa Valley. From there's the, all of the Round Pond vineyards, but all the neighbors' vineyards and both sets of hills. It is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's great this time of year, especially mm-hmm. with it staying
yeah, this
later.
Is a
later
nice, this is
beautiful.
A nice time.
It's fantastic.
Both Napa and Sonoma.
Yeah, so you can give us a call or go to our website at roundpond.com, and we'd love to have you come by.
Now, you also do luncheons, right? And that's a little different?
We do. So in addition to our winery, which we just opened, we were talking about, we also have our olive mill, which is across the street, and we do three tastings there a day, and the noon tasting can also be a lunch, depending on who calls in first. And That is a tour of the olive oil facility and the olive making facility, and then we do a full explanation and sort of guided tour of through our olive oils, our vinegars, and our syrups,
mm-hmm.
and of course the luncheon.
And then how many people can attend a luncheon?
I think our maximum is 10 or 12. You know, we really try and keep it small and intimate,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a big part of what we do at Round Pond is, again, focus on people just having a nice time, you know, being with their friends, and mm-hmm. having it be a very educational experience. Mm-hmm. So we like to keep it small.
And what's the cost?
For the tours and tastings, it's $25 at the olive mill, $25. And then for the luncheon, it's $50.
Uh-huh.
And then over at the winery, the estate tasting is $25 and the tour and tasting is $35.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, those kind of experiences, we've been wine country for a long time now. And the crowded places where you're just going up and you're tasting several wines and then going to another. It's not so much that it gets old, but it gets a little repetitive after
Absolutely.
A while. And to actually sink down and spend some time and try some foods and spend a little bit more time at one place, I think that's a very pleasant way to see what wineries around here are doing.
I think so. I think it's, you know, we try to create something that we would enjoy going to. And, you know, for us personally, being really crowded and sort of rushed and trying to taste wines, it's just, you know, it didn't appeal to us as much. We really wanted to create a setting where people could come and, again, have it be educational, have it be very friendly and approachable. You know, we didn't want people to feel in any way sort of put off or intimidated by, you know, wine or food. So that was the experience we set out to provide, and hopefully we are. Mm-hmm. So.
And, Ryan, what is your role at the winery?
My brother and I run our winery together.
Okay.
I do all the sales and marketing and packaging and sort of that front end, mm-hmm. front side of the house, as we call it. And then my brother does all the operations and production mm-hmm. and sort of the back end, as we call it. But we share an office. You know, we're a really small, mm-hmm. you know, small business. And so Miles and I share an office and, you know, pretty much know exactly what the other one is doing, which I think is important. So.
And they're working. And during the olive harvest, Ryan's in the olive mill and working the olive mill, and during harvest, Miles is in the winery. I have him digging out tanks and pumping over and pulling hoses, and so it's not like they're just sitting in an office. They're in the middle of it.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite things about the business. Not only is it family, which for me is just you know, a delight, and I feel so lucky to be surrounded by my brother and my parents who live on the property and mm-hmm. see them all the time. But also, you know, being able to get your hands dirty and
sure.
make the olive oil yeah. and sort of have that sort of soul-satisfying side of the business is really nice and complement to
it's
sort
great,
of intellectual side of it.
It's
yeah.
a great, it's a lucky way to live.
It is.
Know?
I
it's
feel really
nice.
Lucky. I feel lucky, and I value that for sure.
Now, you do one other thing or two other things. There's the syrup, the citrus syrups.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that you do is really interesting to me. I was writing a book on oil and vinegar I was researching it in 1990. And I went to a place in Italy where they were making infused olive oils infused with flowers and a variety of things. And it was a winery that was doing it, but if I remember correctly, and I think I do, there was some regulation that you couldn't have a vinegar plant within a certain number of meters. And it was quite a number. It was like a quarter mile or a half a mile away from the winery because of the bacteria, the acetobacter. Mm-hmm. But you are making vinegar. If I understand right, you're using the traditional Orleans method. Is that right?
That's right.
How close are you to the winery?
Very, very far.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, I don't think we have any rules or regulations, but we certainly wouldn't want to risk our wine. And
but you're
the
able
truth
to
of the
do
matter
it.
Is,
you're able to make it work. I think that's so great.
Yeah, we are. You know, Acetobacter is incredibly, it's a strong, strong substance. So mm-hmm. it can find its way into wine easily. It can also find its way into olive oil, not as far as ruining it, but just imparting a smell and a flavor that you don't want. So mm-hmm. You know, we try and keep it separately. And in fact, we started out doing it on the property. It grew too big, so we moved it off-site, and now we're in the process of bringing it back. And it'll be on its own, you know, separate facility, which is probably, I don't know, half a mile from our oil or our wine.
And tell us about, what do you make it with? What do you use? Are you using estate wine?
Right. So, you know, when we set out to make our vinegar, it was something that was small. We'd been doing it on the property just for fun, again, sort of like we'd been doing with our other products. And we thought, well, if we can make, you know, hopefully a great wine, why can't we make a great vinegar from a great wine? So, and we thought, why can't we make varietal vinegars? You know, we weren't seeing too many of those out mm-hmm. there, and just really try and create two very different vinegars. So we created a Cabernet Merlot blend vinegar, and we created a Sangiovese Nebbiolo Petit Verdot blend vinegar, and we made the wines at our neighbor's at the time, which is where we were making our wine when we before we had our own winery, mm-hmm. and then you know, introduced a mother and then aged the vinegar, both vinegars, in old barrels, oak barrels, for probably up to 12 months, I believe it was. And then after that, when we reached the right sort of balance of acidity, you know, 6% is what mm-hmm. we're going for, with a little bit of residual sugar in there. And then we bottled it. And it was amazing what we found, two totally different vinegars. You know, the Cabernet is very typical of Cabernet. It's strong and tannic and bold. And then the Sangiovese Nebbiolo Petit Verdot blend is soft and kind of caramel-like. Two totally different mm-hmm. Products.
I love Cabernet vinegar.
Thank you.
I love it. I find it really versatile in cooking because mm-hmm. Its flavors hold up. You don't end up with just the acidity. You really end up with the flavors.
Absolutely. And one of the things we discovered when we were looking at vinegars is, I don't know what happens in the process, but there are different processes, and I think the vinegars get diluted. And so in this case, we don't add water, we don't add anything back, mm-hmm. and it ends up being a very strong and powerful vinegar. So you don't need a lot of it, but it really does enhance, you know, the flavors in the food, whatever you're making, whether it's, you know, a marinade or a stew or something rich like that, mm-hmm. or just using it in a salad dressing.
Mm-hmm. So what did you bring to taste?
We actually brought both of our vinegars, our Cabernet and our Sangiovese.
I'm going to take this bottle in my hand because I have to describe. It's a fairly common bottle these days in California. It has a very long neck and a lean bottle. But you have put these neck labels on it that I absolutely love. This one, which is this is the Sangiovese Nebbiolo. And it's sort of almost a warm caramel color, a gold, and either pale cream.
Yeah.
Stripes, and then all of the oils and vinegars have these striped neckers on them, but in different colors, and I love the look.
Oh, thank you.
I think
yeah,
it's really pretty.
And
all the wines, too. Yeah. So that's sort of your little signature.
Yeah, it's become the signature.
Yeah. It's very attractive, and there's something, first of all, it catches your eye. So if somebody's looking for it, they're going to eventually learn to, or not even eventually, two or three times they're going to learn to spot that. But it's also just, there's something that makes you feel good when you see it.
I agree.
Aesthetically pleasing.
Something about color. You know,
yeah.
You can't go wrong with good colors. And so.
Yeah, and then in this way, they're just it's like, it almost looks like a birthday party.
Yeah,
that's
sort
cool.
of makes sense. You know, the blood orange is sort of these beautiful orangey reds, and the Meyer lemons are these incredible golds mm-hmm. and yellows. And so.
Well, I would love to have a little taste of the Cabernet vinegar. See if I can do that without banging things up here.
Right.
Get all the implements here.
All right.
And yes, I can take a spoonful of vinegar.
Now, traditionally, if you come to the Olive Mill and you taste our vinegars, the way we taste vinegar is with a cube of sugar.
Yeah.
So you're brave to just drink it in, but
it's
either
really,
way.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. It's
beautiful. It's really good. And you can get that just that little bit of residual sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that that's there.
That's important. Balance out the acidity a little bit.
Yeah, and it helps bring the flavors, I think, those individual flavors to your palate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, very nice. I know a chicken dish I would make with that. Chicken au vinaigre.
Ah, excellent.
Be really good.
I'd like that recipe.
It's yours. I will send it to you. So let's compare with the other one.
Okay. And then we've got our Sangiovese Nebbiolo Petit Verdot blend. And again, this is softer, lighter, more caramel-like.
Okay, let's see here. Oh, it is much lighter.
Yep.
Much lighter, more forward on your palate, too.
Yep.
It doesn't have quite so many back palate flavors. It's very nice.
Thank you. And you can use them in, you know, very different things.
I have another recipe for you that this makes me think of. Vinegar eggs.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
It's a recipe I took right out of Kermit Lynch's newsletter. God, I have to remember exactly how to make it. But you melt a sufficient quantity of good butter in a good frying pan, and you carefully break an egg. You're gonna fry the eggs. And I think it's been a while since I made it. And Kermit says this is not breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, he has you start out. You open a bottle of Beaujolais. You pour yourself a glass of Beaujolais. Mm-hmm. Then you fry the egg in the butter, and you turn it. And then I think you take the egg out. And if I remember correctly, you add some red wine vinegar to the butter. And simmer that, and then add another swirl of butter and some salt and pepper and pour it over the egg. Have some good bread alongside and pour yourself another glass of Beaujolais.
I've had it. It's great.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yes.
Yeah. To me, that's a very good summer, you know, a summer dinner just on a slow night when you're not going to do anything. Maybe you've been working all day. And you just want something simple and really satisfying.
That sounds great. My latest is just taking a little bit of the Cabernet vinegar with some fresh strawberries, which we have in the garden right now, and a little bit of whipped cream, and can't go wrong with that. So.
Yes, strawberries. And I always say, whenever I do that, I add probably what most people would consider an unusual quantity of black pepper.
Oh.
I really love black pepper and strawberries. That's one of my favorite flavor combinations.
Wonderful. That sounds good.
I think it sort of helps make it wine-friendly as well. So, let's see the olive oil. There's one more wine, too, but...
We have the wine.
Maybe we should do the... taste some olive oil.
Fantastic. Would you like to try our...
Did you bring...
We have one of each, so if you want, we can start with the Italian.
Okay, yeah, great, and perfect. Yeah, let's start with the Italian.
And this olive oil, rather, we make from five different Italian varietals that we grow on the property. And we make this oil to be peppery, spicy, typical of your Tuscan-style wine, or olive oil, rather, which is great. You know, one of my favorite ways to use this is just to... put a little fresh oil in a frying pan, a little garlic, a little red pepper, and then heat that up, throw it in over some fresh pasta. And
yeah, that's really
salt,
nice.
You can't go wrong.
Tastes like vinegar, but...
yeah, not good.
But no, that was really... It really has that trail of pepper.
And we're looking for
so
that,
nice.
You know,
yeah,
a little bit of that pungency in the back of your throat.
That's one of my favorite qualities of olive oil. I look for that.
Yeah, one of the things it's interesting we find when people come to the Olive Mill, you know, people are still just getting to know olive oil better, and they don't realize oil should taste like something. You know, it should have a flavor and a strong flavor to it. And so that's
Spanish,
why we like to have people taste it.
The Spanish one is much softer, much more delicate. What are the varietals, the Spanish ones?
Our Spanish varietals are Manzanilla, Sevillano, and Mission.
Okay, so those are the ones that have been in California for a while.
Definitely.
Because there's some of the ones you find in Spain become a little more controversial.
Oh, interesting.
Like the Piqual.
Oh, right. Now, these are typical Californian varietals, especially the Mission, and we make this oil to be very soft and buttery and very food-friendly. You know, I use this with my 3-year-old and my 1-year-old, and they love it because it's drinkable, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's a really, really lovely oil. And then you have the flavored oils.
We do.
I shouldn't say flavored. The
Yeah, the citrus oils. Yeah, the citrus oils. And we'll start with the blood orange, which is probably one of the most popular. And this is this year very soft and buttery, and has a wonderful aroma of blood orange, which is probably my favorite.
And even though that blood orange is it's there on your palate, you really sense it more as you breathe. Mm-hmm. It's like you're smelling from the inside mm-hmm. of your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. those aromas are just going back up. It's very, very pretty.
Thank you.
So when they're doing the pressing these and working with the citrus, they have a large crew at the olive mill slicing the citrus, juicing it. And so when you drive by the olive mill, you can smell all the citrus. It's just great.
And then the last one we have is the Meyer lemon, and this one is a little more peppery. In fact, we've been making a great salad with just pears and lettuce and some feta cheese and pairing it with our Sauvignon Blanc. And,
and speaking of Sauvignon Blanc, that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
That's,
I think the Meyer lemon's my favorite of this year's
vintage. I think that might be my favorite, at least
vintage.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great time of year to come by actually at the end of harvest and see the citrus oils in process, because it's just such a incredible aroma and sort of feeling that you get in the olive mill that time of year.
Okay, and so now you're going to tell us about Sauvignon Blanc. This is a varietal I have become very fond of in the last few years.
Yeah, we are really excited about our Sauvignon Blanc. It's we planted this vineyard, I guess, in 2005, Carrie, or 2004?
2004.
So we got our first vintage off the property. We only got 6 tons this last year, and didn't make too much. But again, Rutherford really makes some fantastic Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. It just grows very well there. And so
in the Chez, we have a separate room just for the production of Sauvignon Blanc. So the Chez is a beautiful room right underneath the hospitality floor of the winery, full of all the barrels of the red wine. But then we have a glassed-in 20-foot-high ceiling glass walls where we have all the stainless steel, beautiful stainless steel barrels that we ferment and age the Sauvignon Blanc in. So inside the Chez, we have a temperature, and inside the glassed-in room for Sauvignon Blanc, we have the Sauvignon Blanc. And we just released this wine last week.
Really? Well, you know, it's warm right now, and I'm used to drinking it very cold. But even warm, it still has that very pretty lean. It's that almost got that lean snap almost to it mm-hmm. that is one of the really most refreshing qualities. And this one of the things I like about Sauvignon Blanc is it's very refreshing.
It is.
Well, we're very excited about it, mainly because it has the depth and roundness that makes mm-hmm. great Sauvignon Blanc. I've made Sauvignon Blanc since I was a kid. And I love the variety. And I love it because my wife likes Sauvignon Blanc mm-hmm. and hates Chardonnay. But the other part of it is that where Cabernet grows very well, Sauvignon Blanc usually grows very
right.
well. So we made a decision over 4 years ago to replant a section of vineyard that was in Cabernet to Sauvignon mm-hmm. Blanc. And we're so pleased with how this wine shows. We're mm-hmm. planting more Sauvignon Blanc.
Great. Well, now, you say that it's you talk about it being round, and this is a conundrum for me with this varietal. Because on one hand, you can describe it as round, but at the very same time, it's also lean. And I think that it's both lean and edgy, yet round in your mouth. And, you know, all those terms conflict with each other.
Well, one of the challenges is to get the grapes to a point that there's a lot of flavor. The skins have just turned golden in color. And the sugar hasn't run away, but mm-hmm. this is just slightly more than 14% alcohol. And it has depth and flavor and style to it. Instead of picking the grapes basically underripe and then getting this sort of very herbal smell in Sauvignon Blanc. And I don't particularly like those kind of Sauvignon Blancs. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what Napa Valley can do very well mm-hmm. in that making this. The wine has just blossomed. Mm-hmm. We bottled it a month and a half ago. And so what you see is this great texture and a beautiful flowery nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely, really just excellent Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, we're really pleased. Yeah, the nose is probably one of my favorite parts. It's just so aromatic.
Yeah. Now, you also do the citrus syrups.
We do.
Tell me about those. How do you make those?
The citrus syrup is it's a neat story. We as I've said, we make our olive oils with our citrus oils using the peel from the fruit. So we ended up with literally, hundreds of gallons of fresh organic Meyer lemon and blood orange juice, and we're giving it away to restaurants and selling some, but we're just consuming some. We just couldn't go through it all, and Cowgirl Creamery was looking to create a citrus syrup, or was interested in having a citrus syrup to pair with their cheeses, and so they knew Jeff Dawson, who's our
Jeff
gardener.
Works with you?
Yes.
I know Joe. Yes, Joe.
So he's phenomenal, and he runs our gardens and has made them all biodynamic, which, by the way, has just been an amazing improvement. And so he suggested the idea of the citrus syrups to us, so we looked into it and ended up creating Meyer lemon and blood orange citrus syrup, and we're so excited. In fact, we sold out of them and are in the process of making more. Hopefully that'll be out in June or July, but it's just fun to be able to use all the elements and everything that we create. And so that was a no-brainer and something that just ended up working.
It's a great idea. And how do you like to use them?
You can use them in a lot of different ways, actually. I mean, one obvious way that a lot of people like to use them is in cocktails, which is obvious, or in desserts and things like that. But the way we pair them at the olive mill, and something that people are surprised about, but I love them, is just with cheese. With a fantastic, triple cream or any cheese like that, or maybe even an aged Gouda.
I can imagine they might be really good with the Meyer lemon. Might be nice with a nice feta.
Yep, it's fantastic. That's exactly how I often put
and
it
also
together.
Also, I bet the cheese halloumi.
Mm, that was
some
great.
fried halloumi with some. So good. Yeah. Okay.
And they're also great to make a salad go another direction.
Yeah,
I can see that too.
A vinaigrette with the citrus syrups.
So we only have about a minute and a half left. So two quick questions. One, any idea what new things you might come out with? And then anything on the horizon that's inspiring you?
We're toying with different ideas, but I think we might put out a balsamico or a condiment, because it won't be 12 years old, but that might be in the future for us. But we shall see. Right now we're really focused on our wine and getting the winery up and going. And so it'll be a little while, but maybe a balsamico.
Okay. And people can get information at roundpond.com.
Correct.
And that has all the driving info. That has all the information you need. But, people listen to the show who actually don't have computers. So what's the phone number?
The phone number is 707-302-2575.
That's 707-302-2575.
Correct.
Well, Ryan McDonnell and Carrie Gott of Gott Group, thanks so much to both of you. Brought wonderful things to taste. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Hope to see you sometime at the winery this
spring. Oh, please. Sooner the better.
And thanks to you for listening here to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Have a great week. Next week, we have a very special Mother's Day episode of Mouthful for you. It's going to be a conversation with Eleanor Coppola talking about her new book. So take your mom somewhere nice, and then come back in time to listen to Mouthful here on KRCB.
To the Lord lift praises be. It's time for dinner now. Let's go.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS.
Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Dinner, glory. Dinner, glory. Dinner, glory. Dinner, glory. Dinner, glory.